listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Michael Sterling.
Yes, you are. You're back and you're bigger than ever.
I am.
Yes.
I am. And you, who are you?
I am Paul Strolley, yes. And I am back to walking among the living. Yes.
Well, it's good to be back. You flew in late last night from Chicago.
Yes.
You made me sound arms are tired.
Make me sound so cosmopolitan. Yeah. I flew in, yeah. I was packed in like so. I don't know what it is. Can we talk about air travel?
Yeah.
We talk about air travel.
First, however, what we're going to talk about is our presenting sponsor. We'd like to thank them, of course, Paul. Breakdown Services is the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, please visit them at breakdownexpress.com.
Our thanks also go out to performingartslive.com for their ongoing support of our live arts calendar. Performingartslive.com is the most comprehensive such listing service in Southern California, enabling you to search events by date, category, and region. I never really thought about how important that is in the LA climate, because region is very important when you have to drive everywhere. New York
Absolutely.
And Chicago, you got that. Well, let's meet at a restaurant, take a cab, whatever. So, you know, that's...
Or walk to a restaurant, yes,
which is not an option.
Not the case here.
Out here.
And in studio with us today, Paul, we have two dynamic contributors to the performing arts. Dan Mojica from Broadway's Beauty and the Beast, for which he served as associate director and associate choreographer for over 8 years domestically and internationally, and has since become one of California's most distinguished musical director choreographers of musical theater.
And we also have with us Dink O'Neill, a definite force in the California arts, both as an actor and as a critic for the prestigious West Coast edition of Backstage Magazine. So we're grateful to have both of them.
Thank you for stopping by, gentlemen.
Thank you.
We will be talking to Dan and Dink. I think there's an act in that somewhere, Paul.
They're a dance troupe, aren't they? Dan and Dink?
Dan and Dink.
Yes. And I know the Nicholas brothers and Dan and Dink.
There you
yes.
go. We're going to talk to them in just a few minutes. But first of all, let's talk about you, our week. It was Easter.
Yes, it was.
And how was it for you? You celebrated it in Chicago.
I celebrated it in Chicago with Monica's lovely family and also a friend of ours who is turning 40. So we had the youngest of our friends, the last to turn 40. So my friends Phil and Tim have a house on the dunes in Gary, Indiana. And I tell you, people talk about Gary, Indiana, just you think smokestacks and everything. But then this beautiful historic dune area right on the lake. Beautiful summer homes there. They have a great place. So we had the whole thing there, and it was Bacchanalian.
Bacchanalian? Just... really?
No.
I had no idea.
We're past Bacchanalian.
I only know Fort Wayne. Did you just say Indiana?
Yeah.
Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Oh, life on the edge with Sterling, huh?
Well, no. I only know it because my brother and his wife lived there.
They lived in Fort Wayne?
They did.
Yeah, I spent a week there one afternoon. Lady, hello. Is this thing on? Thank you so much.
Well, so you were in Chicago. I was here.
Dink, don't cover your mouth if you're laughing. I need all I could get.
Oh,
please.
Oh, yes, no, you can be verbal.
That's
your
all right.
Mics are on.
I'm started reviewing you guys already.
Oh, Lord.
I was wondering why the notepad came out. What's that about?
And the cynical look.
Yes.
Uh-oh, we're in trouble. Okay.
So what did you do for Easter?
Well, Easter was a lovely Easter. It was a lovely day with the in-laws, and we went bowling, Paul.
You went bowling?
You know, I'm a good bowler. You know that.
I did not know you were a good bowler.
What do I throw about 240? Is that good in your goal?
All three
good.
Games? Come on.
Three games combined.
Yes. You throw 240.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I learned that phrase yesterday.
Yes. Did you?
Yeah.
You don't even know what 240 means.
I don't.
No,
I don't.
I asked you how you'd play golf, you'd say the same thing.
Yeah, 240.
About 240.
Yeah, about 240.
Yes.
Yeah.
What's your hockey score, Michael?
About 240.
Okay.
Yeah. No, it was fun, though, you know, and to the all-new Pins, P-I-N-Z, in Studio City, lanes, which is very beautiful and very state-of-the-art, and you don't even have to keep score anymore, because everything's done for you.
Yeah, I noticed that the last time I went. It's all high-tech.
The velocity of how much you're throwing, the wind speed is all calculated on the screen above you. It's quite amazing.
Which is for the obsessive-compulsive people like me. That actually takes something away, because my whole thing was like, I'm scoring.
Yeah.
It was a big part of it.
You don't have to add.
Bowling thing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now it's all done for you.
Or cheat.
Or cheat. That's true. That's true. You can't cheat anymore.
That's right.
I thought about that.
So, but how are you a bowler?
No, actually. I bowl like other people sees. I don't bowl very well, no. I look like a flamingo with Tourette's when I get up there.
Oh, my. That's
very unfortunate, yes. But interestingly enough, Monica had never bowled, which is hard to believe that someone of... By the way, I have to apologize to Monica on the air. I have to apologize to her right now.
Because this must be big.
I was just going to say that Monica is of Polish descent, so the fact that she has not bowled...
For our listeners, this is Paul's wife.
...into her 40s is odd, because, you know... You grow up in Chicago, you're Polish, it's sort of, you know, bowling is, you know, part of your life. But I called her cherubic on the air. That's the only ever been offended, because she is not cherubic. I found out what cherubic meant. I thought it just meant cute. But apparently it means doughy and zoftic.
I was going to say.
Which I did not know.
Could be.
And she is neither of those things.
No, she's not.
So I apologize wholeheartedly to my lovely, tiny, diminutive...
Angel.
Thank you. That's what I meant. Angelic, not cherubic. Thank you, Michael. Just keep holding up the cards. Thank you. Okay.
Monica, you and I have to talk.
Yes.
But no, you flew back there, obviously.
I flew back, yes.
How was the flight?
I
was flying on a holiday.
Well, Michael, I basically, flight for me is get in seat, insert one knee in each nostril, and hope for the best. Because I get packed up in these things. There's no leg room. The people, I think they find out where I'm seated and they go, okay, Paul's in 15C, feed everyone else curry. I think that's just exactly what they do. I know what's going on. But
you gentlemen, you've flown recently, have you?
Mm-hmm. It's been a while, actually, for me. I think the last time was on a class trip with my daughter to D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an overnighter, just trying to get 25 kids to go to sleep on a plane.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But at least you were all kind of together and you knew each other.
Oh, no, they spread us out all over the place.
Oh, they did?
Oh, really?
It was heinous. It was awful.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
What airline was that?
Blanked out of my memory, honestly.
Blank airline.
I have no idea.
Blank airlines. They're a small airline. They're at Fred's Airport.
They're no longer in business.
Yeah.
Dan, what about you?
JetBlue, I think, last.
JetBlue. We were talking about JetBlue at lunch today.
It's a good thoroughfare to New York.
From the Burbank?
Burbank
to JFK. I just bought the tickets today because I'm going back there in June.
Best airport to get out of.
Oh, yeah. And you know what it's like? It's like Westchester County in New York, in White Plains.
Right.
It's just quick. It's easy. It's in and out. But it's still big enough to get the big aircraft in there.
Right.
But... we were talking about JetBlue. They designed their airline on the top 10 complaints of air travelers. It's like, these are the top 10 things people complain about. Food's terrible? Okay, no food. movie's bad? Okay, we'll give you TV. Leg room is always a thing. It was a brilliant way to design an airline. And if I remember correctly, after 9/11, it was only JetBlue and Southwest that were in the black after 9/11. They were the only two to not really suffer as significantly as the other.
Well, I would imagine,
So
I've never flown Southwest.
Well, you don't fly unless you're carried around on a velvet pillow because you're so, you know how you get.
Well,
you have to fly first class. You got to fly business.
I do, but as I told you before, it's not. I'm always working with the people who are flying me in those situations. So,
But you don't like to fly anyway.
I don't like to.
It's not one of your favorite things. So you would never fly for vacations or anything. It's always someplace that you can drive to.
No.
The questions get harder as we continue.
Dump the host.
My mileage.
Back to bowling.
I'll take air travel for 500, Alex. Sorry.
I use my miles.
You use your miles.
Because I do fly first class. I mean, to me, it's part of the experience. You know, if you're going. Part of the experience.
Yes, but Michael, you wear a smoking jacket for card tricks. You're hardly the yardstick for this thing.
It's really coming down.
I'm saying you have an elegant way about you. I'm not saying it's not natural. I mean, it's just the way you are. But, but I miss those days, too. It's the same thing with Vegas. The days when, jackets were required.
Yes.
There's an elegance of that time that I miss. You go to Vegas now, and it's just sort of like matching fanny packs everywhere you look.
That's right. That's right. Not pretty.
Not pretty.
Even at the best hotels.
Yes.
But, we need to move on.
Yes, we do.
And I'm happy Easter, kind of. I guess, based on what you had to say there.
Happy Easter to you,
Thank
too.
Thank you. It actually was a very nice Easter.
I'm glad.
Our first guest, ladies and gentlemen, was associated for nearly a decade with Disney's Beauty and the Beast on Broadway and around the world. Having mounted, staged, and supervised all 16 companies of the show in such locations as London, Tokyo, Madrid, Buenos Aires, Mexico City, Stuttgart, Sydney, and 3 U.S. national tours. His latest endeavor, the sweeping Broadway musical The Light in the Piazza, for the Civic Light Opera of South Bay Cities, opened this past weekend at the Redondo Beach Center for the Performing Arts. Will you please welcome our guest, Mr. Dan Mojica.
Get applause here on the radio show.
You do. Yes. You'll be billed for it.
I don't know. It's a tough act to follow. What do you say, Dink? We should take this up now?
I was already standing. Applause.
I bowled 240 over the weekend, too.
Did you? Oh, you see? It's the magic number. Everyone uses that number, I think. Dan had an opening, Light in the Piazza, one of my favorite shows.
Yeah.
Loved the show.
Love it, too.
Saw it, of course, I did not see it in New York, but I did see it here with my dear friend Christine Andreas in the lead. I was doing the tour with David Burnham.
Saw it at the Amundsen.
Yes. David was a guest of ours not too long ago, actually, and discussing that tour and that experience, and what a show.
It is quite the show.
I did not. When I go to see this production, I will be a virgin to it.
I just invited
you. Oh, you haven't seen any production?
I have not. I'm looking forward to it.
Oh.
A Piazza Virgin.
Yeah. Piazza Virgin.
I don't know what that means. Yes. Sounds like a pizza.
Well, that would be a pizza with olive oil because it's extra virgin.
Well, you have a lovely cast of people, I noticed, and of course we were talking earlier about the lovely Michaela Lee.
Correct. Michaela Lee is playing the role of Clara.
Mm-hmm.
A young thing that I just found here in town, though she had participated in your Next Great Stage
LA's
Star.
Next Great Stage Star.
I knew I remembered that name. I saw her in the program from Stage Star.
That's right. Yes.
But I didn't meet her through that, though I met her. She was doing a production of The Fantastics at the Welk Theater. And just 4 weeks prior to casting the show, I was still looking for a Clara, and there she was.
I don't know the show very well, Dan. What is this? Clara, what
are... She plays the daughter of... the mother Margaret. They're both on a trip to Italy on vacation, and they're reminiscing. She went. Margaret went on her honeymoon there to Italy, and she was taking her daughter there to share in her experiences of Florence.
Oh, okay.
And then in that trip, they meet a young man by the name of Fabrizio, and Clara becomes smitten with him and he with her, and the love story unveils.
So it's a significant role in the show.
Yes. It's the lead.
Okay. How many people in the cast?
There's 16 in the company.
Oh, okay.
Have you ever been down to Redondo Beach?
I have not.
Performing Arts Center. It's a beautiful theater.
I have not. I know we've talked about a number of shows there.
It's a wonderful theater. It's, I believe, a 1,400 seat house somewhere.
It's a decent sized venue. Wow,
and,
1,400.
Redondo Beach Performing Arts Center. Off of Aviation. It's a great theater, and the Civic Light Opera of South Bay Cities do 4 shows out throughout the year there at this Performing Arts Center, and this is one of their seasons in their 20th anniversary season.
And your lead, Mary Gordon Murray, is best known for her role on ABC's One Life to Live.
Right. She was in One Life to Live. However, you know, she's a theater gal.
Yeah.
Coming back, you know, she was on Broadway, I believe, in Into the Woods, mm-hmm. and... I actually know her because I worked in a production of Damn Yankees with her many years ago up at the Sacramento Music Circus. So we go way back, and lucky to have her in this production.
Dan, you're no stranger to South Bay either.
No.
You've directed quite a bit out there.
This is, I believe, my 6th production there in the last couple of years. So it's a little home away from home here in the Southland. Mm-hmm. And they're pretty good to me there, and... I'm lucky to
have 4 shows a year, so they're always humming there with something
throughout the year.
Can I give the stats on how people can attend this thing?
Absolutely.
I went to the wrong place, so I'll lead off with this. Ample parking.
there is ample parking.
Is no small thing out here.
Well.
I was going to say, no small thing out here. Ample parking and valet parking is available nightly. Tickets can be purchased by calling 310-372-4477. That's 310-372-4477. Or by visiting Civic Light Opera's website at civiclightopera.com. That's civiclightopera.com. There's student scene. senior group discounts available by calling the box office. And performances are Tuesdays through Saturdays at 8, with matinees Saturday, April 30th, and Sunday, May 1st. Saturday, May 7th, and Sunday, May 8th at 2 p.m. Sunday evening performances on May 1st and May 8th at 7 p.m. But those are obviously all details you can pick up on the website when you go to CivicLightOpera.com to attend this
production.
Wait,
how did they get that website? They must have paid a fortune for that.
I don't know.
CivicLightOpera.com.
They were one of the first. They've been around for quite some time. So.
Wow.
Well, here in
Yes, but .com is spelled K-O-M. No, oh. I'm kidding. That's not the case.
That's a misprint.
That is not the case. It's not the case.
No, well, it's really a great organization.
Well, the show won 6 Tony Awards, didn't it, on Broadway? I think so.
It did. Won score and orchestration for the actress Victoria Clark, who played the lead that Mary Gordon Murray is playing.
Right.
Let's see, what else did it win? I want to say sets, but I'm not sure.
Whatever. I urge people to see it because it's one of those kinds of experiences that, first of all, with the orchestra and the orchestrations in that show are so lush.
Well, and we're lucky. We have a 16-piece orchestra here in this particular production. Yeah, which is a rarity.
It is.
You know what it is? It's like seeing... This is how I've always felt about that show. I feel like you are looking in a window on people's lives.
Absolutely.
You know, that it's just unfold... Like, you shouldn't... Like, it's really not your business, but
so
it's
there's
a little voyeuristic
intimacy that's not there normally
is.
Found in musicals.
It is very much so. It's very emotional because you become involved with these characters. It's an unusual musical for this day and age, I think, or certainly.
Well,
time.
It's one of the newest works written in the last 20 years that is not with helicopters and chandeliers, and it really concentrates just on the story
really
and the relationships.
The
so you know, it is an intimate musical in that sense.
That's interesting. There really are so few of those because you think about mounting a musical and it's always like, you know, this you need a lot of money to mount a musical. And there aren't really, I mean, not that this sounds small budget by any means, but it does sound like it's a production that could be, and just from hearing you discuss it, because obviously I know nothing about it, as I've said, but it sounds like it's something that could be pulled off without pyrotechnics and platforms.
It
and
is.
You know,
it's a simple love story.
Yeah.
That's where it all starts. You know, and yes, we are very fortunate. We do have grand sets. We do have beautiful costumes and all of that as well.
Right.
But it also can be done on a smaller scale.
Right.
In a fashion because, you know, it is just basically that story.
It doesn't require that.
That's
right.
Correct.
Right.
That's correct.
It's not like, you know, Starlight Express.
Right. You don't need a helicopter.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the reasons I loved Hedwig. Hedwig and the Angry Inch so much.
Uh-huh.
I thought that was one of the few rock musicals where it was just like, you know, you could do it in the basement of a coffee house and it would still have just that same sort of appeal
to
it.
Right, right.
Did you ever see Hedwig?
I did not.
No?
No.
All right. That's fine.
Were you in it?
No,
I
wasn't in it.
No, I mean, I know you've done musical theater.
Yes.
Every time you say something that you've done, I'm always surprised because I don't think of you as a musical theater person.
No, many people don't, which was the problem.
I mean, he's a brilliant actor, Ovation nominated,
for his one-man show.
When a reviewer tells you that you sing with the intensity of a dentist drill, I think that's probably...
Ouch.
No, he's a great comedian on the stage.
I was very lucky, though, because where I grew up, a small town I grew up, there weren't a lot of people who sang at all. So whenever anything juicy came along, I always got, you know, and in college, too, I got some decent...
What was your audition tune?
I got to do roles that, you know, I did Jesus and Jesus Christ Superstar, and
I did
Tony and West Side Story.
I can't picture that.
What?
I can't
picture that. Well, you know, imagine me at about $1.40 with a beard, and you know, it was just like, you know, with...
What does that mean, $1.40?
£140.
Oh, £140.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I should have said $2.40.
Yeah, then
you would have known what I was talking about.
Exactly.
Thanks for the callback. but no, actually, we talked about this. I do want to get back into it. I was thinking about taking, finding a vocal coach and getting back into it because I, you know.
Well, these are the men that can tell you right here about all of that.
You're tall.
Right?
I know your shoe sizes already. So.
we always end up talking.
It's come
about
to that, ladies.
No,
gentlemen.
We talk
because know his shoe size.
I should explain how that occurred. We were talking bowling in the lobby, and I was saying that I couldn't bowl with my brother because the bowling alley in Richfield, Connecticut, only had one pair of size 13s at the time because I was 13, not a size 14 yet.
And I had said that preceded by the fact that I had at my bowling experience saw Shaquille O'Neal's
shoes.
Yes, at 22, size 22.
Jeez, unbelievable.
Yeah. So there you
unbelievable.
Go. A small family could live
Try drinking champagne out of that.
Or whom? Well, I'll see. Dan, back to you, sir.
Why? What we're talking about is just so magical.
It's very theatrical.
Dan, I want to ask you something. Can I ask Dan something? I saw something in the promotional material that you're the original, you know, part of the original creative team behind Beauty and the Beast.
That's correct.
I saw there's this fantastic documentary about the Disney when Disney flipped everything with their animation when they were really in a bad way.
The first theatrical production, stage production.
Right.
Obviously it was a successful film, animated film.
Right.
But if you watch the film is like you're watching a musical.
Right.
Obviously animated, but so that was sort of their first entrance way into the theater. Using that production, I was there from the get-go, from its inceptions out here in California, and stay with it for all that time. And it's quite a success around the world.
Yeah,
traveled around the world with it as well. And
did you see the recent production that came
I did not
through,
see the recent Pantages? Tour that came through. I did not see that.
Dink, did you?
No, I did not. Mm-hmm. Did not.
16 companies of the show around the world.
That's correct.
Unbelievable.
And it still has a few. There's a production in Madrid now, and obviously this national tour that's out again.
Right.
A revival of it. But it was a lot, in many languages as well.
I'm always curious about things like that. When you're with something so long, when you're with it from its inception, and then you're with it through so many, how do you, to cut through the fat, how does one stay enthusiastic about a production? I mean, it's obviously a wonderful musical. It's a ridiculously right. successful. But how do you, as an artist and as a creative person, keep your enthusiasm for something like that? Is it just new cast, new life?
Well, that's a big part of it.
Okay.
Every time you do a new production, there's a new cast, a new group of people that you're going to get to know, new different people that you're going to pull out, use their talents to bring life to the show itself. But also, in this particular case, I was going from the U.S. to Vienna, to Germany, to Stuttgart, to London, to Spain, to Mexico. I was traveling, so it couldn't get boring for me.
Yeah, right.
Always, and to do it in a different language. And over the years, we tinkered with it and improved upon it as time went on. So it really never was boring for me.
Were you traveling first class?
Business class.
Oh, okay. Well, that's not so bad.
Why are you holding up that piece of paper that says peasant? What is that about?
Business class.
You're the only first class person in this room.
Yeah. You're very kind.
Oh, do we have to talk?
I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No.
It was a thrilling experience. People always ask me, how did you do it for so long? And I always say, you know what? It was an opportunity of a lifetime for me, to be able to do a wonderful musical for one and work with great people and great artists. And, Alan Menken wrote the music for this, and it was, really a wonderful experience there. But really the key to it was actually working with the hundreds upon hundreds of actors in the different languages, spending months at a time in a foreign city. So I actually was living the life of a German. That was what was really truly exciting about it for me.
It really did. One of the creative people passed away when it opened on Broadway, wasn't it?
Yes.
It's one of the lyricists who wrote
it's Alan Menken, and it's going to kill me. My Beauty and the Beast friends are going to go.
It's bugging me, too, because I can't think of it. I just saw this documentary, and they were talking about taking this thing to the stage.
He passed away after the movie, prior to the stage show.
Right, just when it was in previews or something, if I remember correctly. We have to look that up.
That's something like what happened in Rent. Same thing, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right before it opened.
Before it opened.
Yeah.
Days or something before it opened.
No.
A couple days.
Yeah.
Right?
Something like that.
Well, Dan, you have worked with so many wonderful, you've done so many wonderful shows, Victor Victoria, the national tour, and with the lovely Tony Tennille, I might add, who I can see in that role.
That was fun.
And Cabaret with Sam Harris, that must have been amazing.
That was correct.
Right?
Yeah.
Joanne Worley and Hello Dolly, of course.
I've been around the block.
And Little Me with Rich Little.
Funny enough.
And I happen to be talking about that show today because I just went to the Musical Theater Guild's
production. You saw Jason Grau do it.
I did.
Yeah.
I did, so we're going to talk about that in a few minutes.
Jason Graw, who also performed at Sterling's Upstairs of Vitello's.
He did, yes. And yes. Has also been a guest on this very
yes.
radio show.
No, we had him on here, yes.
Yeah,
I remember that.
Something else.
Unusual name, two vowels in a row. For some reason, that sticks with me.
Three vowels, actually.
Three vowels.
Yeah, two A's and an E.
In a row?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
G-R-A-A-E.
Right,
yes.
Two A's in a row, I meant to say.
Oh, okay.
Thanks for pointing that out, Jake.
Sure. Spell checker here.
Well, he's a critic, you know.
Dan, we could talk, you know, for another hour about sure. your career here. Unfortunately, we do have to do a live arts calendar, so we're going to go into that.
There.
Paul, I'm going to kick that off. Is that all right?
Thank you.
Please do.
Let Me Down Easy explores the power of the body, the price of health, and the resilience of the spirit based on interviews with an eclectic range of people. From a heavyweight boxer to a supermodel, from Texas Governor Ann Richards to legendary cyclist Lance Armstrong. Says Variety, Let Me Down Easy is a totally vital piece of theater, mixing a stand-up comic's instincts with a great reporter's keen eye. The Second Stage Theater's production of Let Me Down Easy, conceived, written, and performed by Anna DeVere Smith on the Lyceum stage for the San Diego Repertory Theater, is now in performance through May 15th.
Young Zoe is bored. Her parents, distant and apathetic, ignore her. Her life has lost all meaning. Seeking to fill the void of her existence, she slides into an imaginary world, the world of Kidam, where she meets characters who encourage her to free her soul. Kidam had its world premiere in Montreal under the Big Top in 1996. Since that time, the show has toured on five continents and been experienced by more than 10 million people. In December of 2010, Kidam embarked on a new journey, performing the same captivating production, but now in arenas throughout North America. The international cast features 52 world-class acrobats, oh my gosh, musicians, singers, and characters, and is currently in performance through May 1st at the Citizens Arena in Ontario, California. Upcoming performances are scheduled in Reno, Nevada, May 4th through May 8th, and in Sacramento, California, May 11th through May 15th. Wow, that sounds like an event.
Yeah, nice. Always exciting to see one of those Cirque du Soleil shows.
Yes, and I want to chat with you, Michael. You saw, you had something to say about the Musical Theater Guild's production, Little Me?
Yes,
is that
indeed.
What you saw this past week?
I did, this past Monday, actually. Right after we did our show on Monday, I went over to Glendale to the beautiful Alex Theater over there. Mm-hmm. And I must say this, ladies and gentlemen, about the Musical Theater Guild of Los Angeles. It's important for you to know this before I go into the review. It was founded over 10 years ago, and it presents works from the musical theater that are either forgotten or neglected or perhaps unfairly dismissed. Musicals selected to be produced by the Guild are concert versions with very few props and or set pieces, if any, and more often than not, scripts will be held in the hands of the actors during the actual performance. The entire process is put together in approximately 25 hours, and the actors and the orchestra walk into the theater to combine forces for the first time on the day of that night's performance. So it's really, that, given that information, what they do is pretty amazing.
Well, there also has to be an incredible energy to it, because
undeniably.
You know.
And Little Me, which is was the current outing for one night only, unfortunately. Sometimes they go from the Alex Theater in Glendale out to Cabrillo Music Theater
in
Thousand Oaks and do it a second to evening, but this was not the case with Little Me. And Little Me is from 1962. It is a two-act show that was written by Neil Simon and with music by Cy Coleman and lyrics by Carolyn Lee. Based on a satirical novel by American writer Patrick Dennis, which spoofs the style of the popular autobiographies of stage stars of the 20th century. Little Me was one of Simon's earlier works for the Broadway stage, his first big hit having been Come Blow Your Horn, and still running at the same time of Little Me's Broadway debut. And Coleman and Lee had also produced a musical called Wildcat with Lucille Ball. Previously on Broadway, so they got together and wrote Little Me. And this production that I saw was under the watchful and very crafty and creative eye of its director, Todd Nielsen, who I know is a friend of yours. And I'm sure a friend of yours, Dick, as well.
Yes.
And he is, I said to him afterwards, I don't know how he kept all of this going for nearly 3.5 hours. It was a feat, because it's very, very much... The show is, you know, very much a burlesque and kind of a send-up of all of that kind of stuff, the style of the dialogue and whatnot, ably supported by Albie Potts and his nine-piece onstage orchestra, thus enhancing Cy Coleman's music, which remained just as witty as Patrick Dennis's text, which in itself retained its humor and charm, and was just about, as I said, as burlesque, you know, can or should be. Starring Broadway's Eileen Barnett, who was perfectly cast as the older Belle Poitrine. Did I say that right, Ding?
I believe you did.
Thank you very much.
Why didn't you ask me if your pronunciation was right?
Well, I get that. She is the me in Little Me.
Okay.
And Jennifer Malenke in a thrilling performance as the young Belle. And the irrepressible one and only Jason Graw in seven different roles.
It's Gray, actually, Jason Gray.
Two bells.
The show's ensemble of 17 worked tirelessly in the, and I said, 3.5-hour musical, because, man, that is the longest first act I have ever seen in the theater.
And they didn't cut a bit of it,
they
huh?
They didn't. I don't believe they did. Now, I've not hadn't seen it before, so, but it could have been cut a little bit, but that is certainly not something to
But, I mean, that's part of, I mean, apart. It sounds like this style of what they're presenting is sort of picking shows that have challenges like that and giving them a second chance.
Exactly.
And, you know, that's what it sounds like.
Exactly.
You know.
You're exactly
and
right.
Staying true to the material.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And other standout performances included the always captivating actor, singer, dancer Robert Piranunzi, who is Belle's relentless suitor, who dazzled with Coleman's I've Got Your Number and Be a Performer, deliciously done by Joe Hart and Roy Leake Jr., and Malenke's The Other Side of the Tracks and Graw's A Real Live Girl. They were also very, very pleasing with the show as a whole. Still a knockout, actually, almost 49 years later. So I recommend that the next time that you have an opportunity, perhaps to see, if you live in Los Angeles, to see the Musical Theater Guild and a show that they're doing, run to see it out at the Alex Theater and go on their website, musicaltheaterguild.org, and their upcoming season includes High Fidelity, Fanny, Little Women the Musical, A New Brain, and Shenandoah, actually, in 2012. So look them up, ladies and gentlemen. It's a treat. It's a concert-style performance, as said, and you won't see anything quite like it in town.
Okay. Our next guest is not only an actor-singer who has appeared on stage with such stars as Jack Jones, Eric McCormack, Shelley Berman, Kristen Chenoweth, and Marcia Gay Harden, but on television with Monk's Tony Shalhoub, one of my favorite actors, Boston Legal's James Spader, and on such hit daytime dramas as General Hospital and The Young and the Restless. He's also a revered critic of theater in Los Angeles, penning his words for the West Coast edition of Backstage Magazine and the Glendale News Press and Burbank Leader newspapers. Please welcome Triple Threat with a Twist, Mr. Dink O'Neill.
Thank you.
So, Dick, I got to ask you, because we've had actors on and we've had reviewers on, and Michael is a performer, as performed extensively, and he reviews shows for the State of the Arts, and I've reviewed them a little. But that's what I'm most curious to talk to you about right out of the shoot is how do you separate your performer self from your critical self when you attend productions, because you have extensive theater credits here. And I'm just always curious how you can switch that off when you because I always find myself imagining what I would do different as a performer when I watch when I review things, and I haven't done it very much, so I'm curious to talk to you.
Well, I think that one of the things that I've tried to incorporate into my writing is that when I'm looking at it, I'm actually the eyes of the person who hasn't been to see the play yet. Right. And I'm not necessarily trying to influence them one way or the other. It is just my opinion, and I just happen to have the opportunity to publish that opinion. But at the same time, I can't impose. There are times when, yes, of course, you would say it would be nicer if somebody had done this, or it feels like someone didn't have enough time to get this done or whatever. But you have to remain somewhat objective, you know, while you're watching this, even though it is a subjective job classification.
Right.
Otherwise, I think that it's unfair to the performers, because then you start to take into effect what you imagined may have gone on during rehearsals and that kind of thing.
Right.
And that may not necessarily be the case. Right. Everybody has their off nights. If you like it right every time, rent the movie.
Right.
And they're, you know, so it, and sometimes opening night can be better than closing night and vice versa.
No, that's what that it is unfair to the performers. That's why I'm asking you about it, because I, if I could be furiously jotting down notes now, I would be, because I just find that, you know, it is quite a, it is two different mindsets. It's two distinctly different mindsets when you review and you also perform.
Well, I certainly enjoy it. I mean, I think that what I, and a couple of other people I know who are in the same boat that I am, Travis Michael Holder, also writes for Backstage, and he's also an actor.
Okay.
And I think, if I can speak for him, I'm speaking for myself certainly, I would say that you really do have to delineate between the two. You just have to, it's a totally, you put on a different hat when you go to the theater in the evenings to see a show versus being in the show.
Right.
And there's no great mystery to it, I suppose. I've learned a lot. If you had told me when I was in college pursuing a Bachelor of Fine Arts in acting that 25, 30 years ago I would be doing this, I would have said, you're nuts. I really would have, because I, as much as I came out of a high school that emphasized writing skills strongly, and I felt like I was very good at that even in college, it never occurred to me that I could make a sideline avocation, our occupation, out of this. And it's not like I make tons of, you know, money doing it, but I sure do get to see a lot of stuff. And it's, what's great about it is you just went through a whole litany of performers, and so did you, Dan, that I've worked with almost all of these people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, Michael, you've directed me in a show.
Yes.
Dan, you've directed and choreographed me in shows before. I've reviewed your show. You know, it's like there's some kind of bizarre little kumbaya circle here, you know?
I noticed that when Michael was talking. Both of you were just sort of like, I was looking at him, but I could see the nodding on this side. You were both nodding. So, oh, yeah, know them, know
them. Well, you call out names. Joanne Worley. I mean, I played her son in a USA Network TV series one time, you know, a Christmas special. And it's just, it's like, my kids always are like, well, how did you know so many? I'm like, well, I'm getting old. I'm running out of new people to meet.
I would imagine you get to share a lot of theater with them.
Oh, absolutely. They're my theater buddies for the most part. And what's interesting is they range from age, hi kids, by the way, clean the bathroom, 13, 15, and 20. And they have each, although they all enjoy musical theater, because that's been my primary background, they have all developed their own interest areas. My youngest, who's 13, has a just deep love for Shakespeare. And anytime I get a chance to go and review anything that's Shakespearean, she loves to come along with me. My older daughter, who will be 21 in June, is the one that I can take to the edgier stuff, the stuff where
Did you bring her to Grapes and Nuts?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Oh,
okay.
We did. And oh, my heavens.
Beautiful.
And I have to say that it was preceded by, and I will, the name shall remain in the, we won't say what play it was, but the night before we had been to see it, just about the worst play that I think we'd ever sat through. And then to come and see that show, we were just, you remember, yes. I mean, we were just astonished. What a wonderful evening that was.
I just saw it. I was at the house that night, because I think you were there for our opening with the gala we had afterwards. And just, you know, that was one of the joys of that show, was seeing people of different age groups sitting in the audience and all howling at the same thing. It was just really wonderful. So I thought it was someone in your family.
I have a question for you, Dink.
Okay.
Actor versus critic.
Yes.
Do the people that you know in common, that we've all know in common, do they treat you any differently when you're coming in as the critic?
No. And I would say that I think that is a testament, if I can just take a finger and pat myself on the back, in that I do remain truthful to what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about Musical Theater Guild. I love that organization.
Mm-hmm.
Their Touch of Venus. I was not able to see Little Me because I was actually rehearsing for some Easter music stuff at church that mm-hmm. evening. But their production of Touch of Venus, which they did prior to this, was just glorious. Jennifer Shelton. Oh, what a fan I am of her. Which,
yeah.
By the way, a little bit of a plug. She's in All Night Strut at the Colony right now. And fantastic production. But I have seen some shows there that were stronger than others.
Yes.
And in reviewing them, I'm truthful, because I don't, you know, if for me to come in and glaze over something, then calls into question, well, what show did he see?
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing. Just simply because I know. Now, to that end, I don't actively pursue productions where I know someone's in them. If I show up, as is often the case, and someone is associated with the show in any area, design, direction, whatever, performance, that I know, then that just happens because we are in a small, relatively small community.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I've had people say, oh, can you come and review my show? I don't go there because then it puts the onus on me, because what happens if I go, I move heaven and earth to get it scheduled, and then I have to be honest.
Right, right.
Because there's almost that kind of unwritten expectation that come see my show because I know you'll love it.
You just have to let the machine take care of it and just go and see what you're assigned to see.
That's right.
Because like you said in your earlier comment, you'd be hard-pressed to find a production where you did not know someone involved in the production.
Absolutely. And I want people in the industry, I want my peers to know that when I come, they're getting my honest opinion.
Right.
I'm not going to sugarcoat it, and I'm also not going to be harsh simply because, well, I could have played that part, or in some cases, I have played that part. That's not fair to a performer.
Right.
So.
Right.
Let me ask you something. I don't think we've really ever asked this of anyone that we've had on the show specifically, especially in your position of being a critic and an actor at the same time. And that is your observation about Los Angeles theater in general. Where does it rank with you? Where does it rank with a major metropolitan city like Los Angeles? I don't think we can compare it to New York. Maybe we can in some ways.
Well, I'm not as familiar with the New York scene because I've never actually lived in the city. I worked there for a week while we were in rehearsals for a tour that I went out on. But as far as this, there is such a remarkable range of opportunities to see performances here in this city. I primarily handled 99-seat theater because the rule that I have with my editors is I don't review at theaters where I could potentially audition.
Mm-hmm.
That's another, just got to keep that line drawn. So I see a lot of 99-seat theater, and you can go into places that aren't much bigger than this room and see something that moves you beyond words. You will then go to another place that has fantastic production values, etc., and you walk out going,
Not so much. Yeah.
And so it's amazing to me. I've reviewed single performer or solo performer shows. I've reviewed performance art, stand-up. I reviewed a couple of months ago that horse-related show in Burbank, Cavalia that had the beautiful, gorgeous spired tent and everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
One of the most amazing productions I've ever seen. And most people were like, horses in Cirque du Soleil, not on your life. It was truly an homage, and the reaction and relationship that those people had with those horses was uncanny. So it's just, and I have to go back. Years ago, there was a reviewer before I started Backstage named Polly Warfield.
Yes, I know.
Polly, darling woman. Mm-hmm. She was known as being a very positive, upbeat reviewer for the most part. She passed away due to an unfortunate auto accident. And at her memorial service at the El Portal, one of her closer friends made the comment that Polly always went to the theater in a very positive and anticipatory attitude. And about that time, I was kind of getting a little, do I want to keep doing this? And I realized I'd lost that spark. I'd lost that interest of going to the theater because I never knew what I was going to see. And now to this day, I don't go out of my house to go to the theater without remembering that story and thinking about how the people that I'm going to go and see could just be about ready to blow my socks off,
mm-hmm.
And let's hope they do.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't want to go out. I mean, I don't set out and go, okay, well, it's my fourth show in 4 weeks or whatever. This one's going to be bad, and I'm going to write a bad. That's not how I do a disservice if I go in with that attitude.
And it's also, it is such a service to the performers, too, because I've been in shows where I'm convinced that it was the drive over that affected the critic's mood the most before they actually sat down to the thing. Because it is a fact. You really have to get yourself, as a reviewer, you have to get yourself in the mindset to see the play just as much as the performer has to get themselves in the mindset to perform the play. Yeah, and it's encouraging to hear that you actually thought about that.
Well, and I've had, over the course of the years, I've had actors who were in shows that they knew it was a troublesome situation, and they were given it their best college try, and perhaps they were the one aspect out of the show that I picked that said, you know what, this person's got a spark there. This mm-hmm. isn't the play for them, but this is the right spark. And they will come to me later and say, boy, did you key in on that? And maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong, whatever, it's my opinion. But it makes me feel good if I'm able to discern that from time to time.
Well, and I think the fact that you, like both of you, actually, you were a performer as well before you became a director, a full-time director and choreographer. You an actor, still are an actor, and you're a critic. Who, by the way, Dink, other night, saw you on a repeat of The Wizards of Waverly Place.
Yes. I'm very popular in the 8 to 12 set, thanks to reruns.
And I'm not in that age range.
We've had a Wizards of Waverly Place theme going on the show.
Yeah. I watch it right before I go to bed.
Yeah. It's a great show. It's a hilarious
show. Oh, I think it's amazing.
It's a wonderful show.
These kids are fantastic.
And my daughters got to come down and watch the taping and got to meet Selena Gomez. Absolutely.
David Henry, all of them. They're all in the little boy. They're amazing. And I got a big kick out of that. I got a kick seeing you do that scene. It was very, very
funny. It was a lot of fun.
Well, you know what, Paul? We are coming to that point in the show where we have to initiate.
Oh, it's Pantsless Monday?
No, that was last Monday.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Damn it. Okay. Well, we need to initiate our guests.
Oh, that's right. We got 5 minutes left.
Let's start
with Dink, if we could, because we're talking to
Indeed.
Him and continue. We always ask people their most nightmarish thing to happen, either in performance or on stage. Embarrassing, awkward, disastrous, anything come to mind?
About 150 years ago, when I still had enough hair to play Curly in Oklahoma, I was doing a production of it down at Saddleback Civic Light Opera, way down south. And the darling woman who played Aunt Eller in the show came into the rehearsal process completely off book. I mean, she was so prepared. And we, as the course of the rest of us learned our lines and caught up with her, one night we were doing the auction scene for the food basket. And I'm not quite sure what happened. I'm not sure which one of us went off. But by the time we got finished bidding for that thing, it was tens of thousands of dollars that we had gone up to, because people were like, we had basically mortgaged half of Oklahoma to pay for this food basket. And everybody on stage is just looking at each other like, oh, my God, what have we just done? I mean, there's the average, my pants split or the set fell over or, whatever. Somebody actually fell off the front of the stage in a production I was in one time. But this one was the one where we got off stage and we were like, who did that?
What happened? Did the audience catch on?
I don't know. I mean, we never stopped talking, which is why it got so out of hand, because nobody wanted to take a pause.
Right,
and,
right.
And of course, the guy playing Judd was so lucky, because every time somebody said something, all he had to do was go, and two bits. Just over and over and over again.
You meet him off stage. It's like, what was it? What was different about the
exactly.
scene?
Oh, that's funny.
He is a very zany man, Dink O'Neill, on the stage.
Is he? So,
yes, he is.
Is he?
Yes, he
that's
is. As he said, I directed him in Dames at Sea, and he was amazing. And a pleasure to work with.
Wonderful show. And I got to give Dan props. He directed Cinderella that I did down at South Bay, and we had a lot of fun with that production.
He played the king.
And oddly enough, that's Dan's disaster story. Go on, Dan. Tell him what happened.
No,
I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Well, about 150 years ago. let me redo my Beauty and the Beast thing. It's Howard Ashman.
Howard Ashman.
That's the name.
Okay.
So all my Beauty and the Beast friends out there.
Okay.
I'm talking about. So
okay.
That. I was doing a production of 110 in the Shade at San Bernardino Civic Light Opera in my younger years. I was playing Jimmy Curry. And there's a scene where he gets in a fight with his brother, and his brother's supposed to punch him. So he went to punch me, and it was all, choreographed and all this stuff. Well, he punched me. I fell to the floor. And when I fell to the floor, I hit my head on the floor.
Ouch.
And so everybody keeps looking at me funny while the scene's continuing on, as my forehead begins to blow up like the size of my fist.
Oh.
And everybody thought that my brother in the show really hit me for real. And I wasn't thinking twice. I didn't even notice. I was just going on and on and on and on. And it wasn't until I got off stage and everybody's saying, Dan, are you all right? Dan, are you all right? And I said, I'm fine. What's the matter? He says, well, look at yourself. They show me a picture of the mirror, and literally my forehead was blown up like the size of my fist.
Oh, my gosh.
So pretty amazing that I had no recollection that it had even happened, and that it happened out of a fight scene.
Yeah, exactly, because that's why they thought that the other guy hit you. Oh, man.
So what was causing it?
Well, he fell on the floor.
I fell on the floor.
Oh, so it was just the impact.
The impact of the floor that I just accidentally went a little too far.
But that's odd that it would be such a prominent, that has to be
Well, I just, it's like where you slap, like that. You hit something or you hit your forehead, and I apparently had hit it really that hard.
And he now owns the San Bernardino Pacific Club.
But they folded years ago, so there you go.
Yeah. I fell when I was a kid. I fell and I hit my head on the stairs going out my parents' house. Just a little thing here up by right by my hairline, and both my eyes went black.
Really?
Yeah.
Hit you it mean up the color? Here.
What?
The color of your eyes?
No.
Oh.
Yes, I bought special contact lenses because it was a Karen Black lookalike party. No, I hit my head and got black eyes.
Wow. Yeah.
That's because the blood vessels on the top are so close to the surface.
I think it's what it is.
True. True. It is. Before we wrap up, Paul, I must go back to one thing. I said something inadvertently wrong about Musical Theater Guild's website. It is musicaltheaterguild.com for those of you that... we're listening to that. I said .org. It is not that. It is .com.
And you have to be very specific about that these days.
Yes,
because
indeed.
Because now you've got .tv and .everything else and .biz and .net and all that. So.
Absolutely. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us on
Thanks for having me.
State
of the
Arts.
What
a pleasure. Yeah.
It's a different type of show.
I love it.
I love it.
Taking you two on the road.
We could sit around and trade these stories like for a week, right?
Absolutely.
No, and we're very grateful to have you on, and we'd love to have you back sometime soon. So please, matter of fact, what are you doing next week?
No, I've got to go bowling. I'm sorry.
240, man.
Thank you. Thank you both. A pleasure having both of you on. Michael, always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, Paul. Same here. And ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you on the radio next week.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.